Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I've seen CSI through and through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and this is my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 4, Episode 8, After the Show, original air date November 20th, 2003. Director Kenneth Fink, writers Anthony E. Zeiker, Andrew Lipsitz, and Elizabeth Devine. And we start the episode with shots of like the Vegas fountains, like a little bit of like a light show, the Vegas
Bellagio,
fountains.
Right?
Yeah, I think so. There's like haunting music in the background. We then like hear a woman talking over.
Voiceover.
Yeah, like a voiceover. And she's talking about like being a showgirl and that's like her big dream. And then it, you know, we see like the screen of the woman talking. Like we see who is talking. Yep. This is my spot the guest star. Or one of my spot the guest stars.
The woman or the?
The woman.
Oh.
So this is Jamie Ray Newman. She plays our victim, Julie Waters, in this episode. And I know her from a sci-fi show called Eureka, where she plays Tess Fontana.
I've never watched that show. I'm very familiar with it.
It is so. Well,
seen a lot
it
of
is
ads
like, it is like literally impossible to find streaming anywhere. I don't understand why. I cannot find it streaming anywhere.
I think that's a sci-fi problem.
Is it a sci-fi problem? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very frustrating because I really. It's like a, you know, for the most part, like a feel-good show. And, you know, as our society collapses around us, I'm having a hard time watching serious programming because I don't need additional serious stuff in my life. And I like cannot find it. But she plays Tess Fontana on Eureka, and that's where I know her from. So, and before we go further, because this is like a pretty long introductory scenes, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
Our Vegas score is actually 39.
Okay.
But that's because this opening scene is 25 seconds of
Bellagio fountain. Yes.
Yeah, before I'm not counting like when we get to the TV and the next character.
Yeah.
I'm just counting there, and then there's a couple interlaced scenes. And so, but that the weight of that Vegas score is being carried by that opening scene.
Yeah.
It's like really long. I literally was like counting, and then I had to just stop and look to see what the runtime was to figure out how many seconds. So yeah, it's overall not that a lot of Vegas, and it's kind of a weird thing because like those are, I think the fountains are pretty iconic. It also gave
I think the fountains 100% count.
Yeah.
The Vegas score.
Yeah. And like if there was, they definitely scream Vegas. It was very reminiscent of the Heat Wave episode where they had the news talking over background shots all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I kind of gave you this idea. It's a little bit of storytelling.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've had this director before, but this episode has an interesting mood to it.
Oh, yeah. Kenneth Fink.
The name sounds very familiar.
Yeah. No, he's definitely directed other
episodes. Apparently he's a producer on the show as well.
Oh, okay. All right.
39 doesn't feel like a 39, but a lot of the work's being done by this opening scene.
That's fair. So,
although I did not give any bonus points because there's a lot of sort of Vegas showgirl and casino references throughout the episode as well.
Yeah, like kind of scattered throughout.
In some ways, there is a Vegas undertone. Visually, it feels very un-Vegas-y, this episode.
Yes.
I think that's really what I'm getting at is like it has like a look to it that's a little noir almost.
Yeah, I agree with that. So we have this woman on screen. She's like doing like a interview or like an audition. And there's a man watching this tape. And he's just like losing it. He's like just off. And then he calls 911 and he lets 911 know that he never meant to hurt her. Like that wasn't the end goal. And then he, you know, goes to like put a gun in his mouth. And then we have SWAT at the house. The man who was losing it watching the screen walks out holding the gun. We then have Jim Brass like jogging out of the house to the suspect.
Yeah.
And he's losing it. Like he is angry. Jim Brass is angry. And Nick's trying to calm. Nick's like, hey, there's like a lot of people watching. Like you should probably chill it out a little bit. Like
he takes like a breathalyzer test to the
game. Yeah, he is drunk.
So this character, who we will soon find out is Howard DeLome, is my missed spot the guest star.
Okay. All right. This is not my other spot the guest star. So.
Oh, yeah. It's his Martin. What was his? I can't read my own handwriting. Martin Donovan. So he plays like a boyfriend love interest in the show Weeds for like Yeah, I think it's the first or second season for a lot. I was like, this guy looks so familiar. And I watched the whole episode. He's in much better light than this opening scene.
Yes.
A number of times. Yes. I never really made the connection. I just looked at it afterwards. So
so Miss bought the guest
card. I was like, who is this guy? I was like, where do I actually know this guy from? Because, you know, and like when you look at his IMDb, I couldn't figure it out at first. And then I started scrolling down. And then I didn't even remember his character. I was like, who's this character from Weeds? And he's in 14 episodes. Like he's in.
A decent amount of episodes.
He's in the end of the first season and most of the second season.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's definitely where I know him from. Is he like the only thing I really know him from is on his whole IMDb. But the whole time I was like, yeah. And then I watched it the second time and I almost forgot that I knew him from Weeds. There was like one scene towards the end and I was like, oh yeah, yeah, right. I had this guy as a spot the guest star. This is that character from Weeds. So I almost forgot. That's how unspotted he was.
Oh,
on the second watch through, I basically missed them again.
So we learn from Jim Brass that the house is clear. He lets Nick, Catherine, and Sarah know. We go to credits. We have the sheriff giving like a briefing to the news while Sarah and Catherine are inside the house, like, you know, processing, collecting evidence. Sarah realizes very quickly that he was unraveling. Like his mind is not holding up well. And it's obvious that he has like a timeline of the news. Like he has like all these newspapers and such, like kind of detailing her case since she has been missing. They continue going through the house and they find I could not, and I should have looked this up because I'm going to sound like a dummy. What is the room that you call where you process photographs?
Dark room.
A dark room. Thank you. I was like, red room, print room. None of these sound correct. So they find a dark room. He is a professional photographer. Then transition over to Jim Brass with Howard. And I did like this shot. So we kind of get like a profile of Howard's face and like Jim Brass's face. Right there. And Jim Brass still very angry. And I did have to put down, Jim Brass, why you touch him? He like grabs his face and is like, look at me. And I'm like, whoa.
He crosses the line quite a bit. He's definitely doing bad cop.
He is doing bad. He is 100%. There's no good cop component to Jim Brass' performance here. He is bad cop all the way. He's like touching him. He's like threatening him. You know, like, where is she? Tell me where she is. Blah, 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 blah. We then have Catherine with Nick and Sarah. Nick and Sarah, we kind of learn this later on, but they're the ones that got assigned the missing case. So when Julie Waters went missing, it is Nick and Sarah's case. And so they're debriefing Catherine on like everything that they learned. Like her mom was the one who reported her missing. Like they talk on the phone every day. She didn't, you know, pick up the call. Grissom enters. He asks about the drunk guy.
I think it's worth noting here that we literally just had Catherine give up a case to work last episode.
Yes.
Right. Yep. And not pretty, you know, selflessly.
Yeah. There wasn't any rift in the. The transfer of the case.
Work doesn't appear in this episode, but I think it would have been such a good moment to have him there and to like say to Sarah, like, listen, Sarah, we all do it. I just took this big case from Catherine last month or last week or, you know, and, you know, you'd have to have written the show and paced it in that way. And I don't know that they really did, but to come off those episodes back to back, I'm like, like they were really good because this is also like the second time in a row because they're sort of jockeying for this power around this promotion, you know. And so I think it would have been, you know, a good thing because what was it, Nick last episode who was like, you know, Sarah wanted to follow up on that other homicide.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, she's not been happy with her assignments. I really hope we're not going down the road of another Sarah's going to leave CSI. We already played that. You already played that card two episodes. And then she didn't join the banking people or
she
whatever.
She did not
the Secret Service.
Nope, she did not. So as they're all talking, Brass calls Grissom, which brings Grissom and Catherine to walk up to Jim Brass and an officer in the hallway because Howard cut himself and left a message in blood on the wall. So they need CSIs to check this out. And the message reads, sorry, I never meant to hurt anyone, which prompts Catherine to be like, wait a second, is Julie not the first victim?
Was it anyone?
Or multiple people.
Was anyone or was any of them?
Me, anyone or any of them. I'm not.
Yeah.
I wrote it down. I shouldn't say quickly, but
yeah.
Listeners, this was not an easy episode to take notes on.
No.
I do a lot of pausing to like jot notes down. Like, this took me a long time on my second watch through to get through.
Right. I say that because it becomes it sort of made into an important point in terms of like, is this the only person victim we should be thinking about?
Yeah.
Here. And
And then Howard and Catherine have a stare down, like a very awkward, way too long stare down. Yeah. Before Grissom's like, can you put him in the other room? Like, why are you just letting him stare at my CSI? Like, weird. We then have Jim Brass and Sarah with Howard. And he is like, Howard is checked out of this. He is like not paying them any attention. He doesn't care. He's like in his own little zone because he only wants to talk to the pretty one, a.k.a. Catherine. So we then have a plethora of cop cars driving through the desert. Catherine is walking with Howard. He is obviously enamored by her. Like, he wants her to remove, like, her sunglasses and hat. He thinks she walks like a dancer. You know, he just keeps, like, making all these comments. She's being a professional. We see a bunch of, like, teams searching the area because this is where he's claiming Julie is. Sarah then has, like, a sunset chat with Grissom. And she's like, is this logical? Like, we're letting suspects, like, choose their own CSIs? Like, where? Like, how does this make sense? And we then have Jim Brass and Catherine with Howard. It's now it's night. So, like, we've been, like, progressing through the day. Like, we've seen kind of in how the amount of light changes the day progressing. It's now nighttime. He's claiming he's confused. Like, there's so many people around, you know? Like, it could just be him and Catherine. And then we go to the team, obviously minus Warwick, as Nick mentioned, he's not in this episode. They're kind of like talking. And this is where Nick's like, hey, this is Sarah and I's case. Like, we got the missing case. This is really our case. Like, this is a big case. We're both up for a promotion. Like, this would mean a really big deal. Bad Grissom boss moment. He just doesn't say anything. He just like lets them come to their own conclusion. And Sarah's like, cool. Like, got it. And then so her and Nick leave. And Catherine's like, oh, are you going to have my back? And he's like, I always have your back.
I always have your back.
But it was like, not then, because if you had her back, you should have been like, this is Catherine's case. Like, it should have been a definitive, like, I am the boss. This is Catherine's case.
His one contribution to the whole scene was, I'm the senior CSI.
I'm the senior CSI. Yeah.
No, you're not. You're the supervisor.
We then have the lab watching. There's a lot of news segments spread throughout this episode. So we go to the lab watching a news segment on this case. Grissom and the sheriff are having a bit of a walk and talk. And there's some judgment on Catherine having Greg Sanders helping. Because he's like a trainee. Like, yes, he's very good at DNA. But like he's not like a fully trained CSI. Yeah,
this is not his job.
This is not his job description. So then Catherine is with Greg Sanders. They're going through the receipts, and you know, Greg Sanders wants to learn. They talk about the Sam Braun case, and he's kind of like, oh, so that's why I'm here, because I like didn't rat you out for the Sam Braun case. She's like, no, look, you're here because you know you want to learn and blah blah blah. We learn later that's not why she has him on the case, but we'll get there.
Greg, I will say it's a little like, there's a continuity issue here where like Warwick is allegedly on vacation.
Yeah, and then someone says like,
and then later on, Grissom is like, you could have had work.
Yeah,
I was like, oh,
there's, I'll point out another, what I think is an incongruity as well. I'll see if like you agree with me. I put down a question mark. Like, did I miss this twice when I watched this episode? But Greg Sanders finds a receipt from a big snacks, which will come up later. Catherine realized that he checked out a car that afternoon. So that brings us to the dealership. She is, you know, asking this salesperson / manager why Howard would have the car. And this is my second spot. The
really?
Guest star. Yes. I missed him on the first go. But then on the second go, I was like, wait a hot second. I know this gentleman. So this is Gildart Jackson. He does a lot of voice work. So I do think I recognize his voice from the TV show, the anime Castlevania, which is so good. If you haven't watched it, totally recommend. And he does a bunch of like fireside readings of like different classic tales. But what I know him from, not voice acting wise, is, let me just get down. It's a little bit further down. Sorry, I should do that. He plays a character called Gideon on Charmed.
Really?
He's in 7 episodes of Charmed.
I've watched a lot of Charmed in my life, but it's been a very long time since I've watched any of it.
Yeah, he is like a member of the Council of Elders, and he's a mentor for Leo.
That's actually fairly close to when he was in the CSI episode.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where I know him from. So he lets Catherine know that they hired Howard to photograph the car, but very specifically, no model. Like, the sexiest thing should be the car. We don't want people focused on a model. Like, you should just be photographing the car. And then Kath presents a warrant for the car to search the car. After sort of threatening him about maybe cutting up the car to get
evidence. Yeah. Well, he was being a real...
He was being a jerk. Tool being like a
her,
so like,
she was just being a tool, you know. Yeah. So, and she didn't, as far as we know, do any of that, so...
Yeah. So Catherine then is inspecting the car. She finds a hair. She swipes... I put finds blood question mark because they don't clarify.
Okay, they don't show.
She just swipes something and then sprays it and then like bags
she
it
refers
up.
To it later. I think as blood.
I think she does. Maybe that's blood. Why I was blood question mark.
I feel and like they didn't do a good job like letting you know what was happening.
There. I agree.
But later, yeah,
yeah, and so then Catherine gives these samples to Greg Sanders for a DNA comparison. We then have a scene with Sarah and Nick. Sarah, again, is, like, the angry one. She, like, can't believe that they're, like, letting this happen, and they gave the case to Catherine. Nick is kind of like, oh, you know, like, we just gotta help out, right? Like, we all have a common goal. But he doesn't, like, overtly let it show, but he's definitely bothered when he learns that Greg Sanders is the one helping her. Like, he's like, what? Like, she has Greg Sanders, like, on this case? Like, what? What are you talking about? We then have Catherine watching the audition of Julie. Grissom enters. And Catherine's like, there's nothing on these tape. And they're talking about Greg Sanders, though. And this is where she admits that she has Greg Sanders on the case because she needs someone without an agenda.
Yeah.
She's like, I need an agenda-less person on this case.
Like,
so Greg
this
Sanders
is not about
is
making your career. This is about solving the crime.
Yeah. So then we have Sarah and Nick going over missing cases, and one of the cases is a model. And as they're like looking through her file, Howard was one of the photographers on her list. So then Sarah and Nick are on a computer. Catherine enters. They both give her the cold shoulder. She's like, oh, hey, what's going on? And they're just like, but they,
you tell me, it's your case.
Yeah. But they push. And Catherine's explaining that by looking at the odometer on the car that Howard drove it for, I think it was about 133 miles. And Sarah's asking a very pertinent question of like, okay, if he took her out there to take photos, where are the photos?
Yeah.
Like, he's claiming he took like rolls of photos of her. Where are the
A little
photos?
Foreshadowing, but.
A little foreshadowing. Greg Sanders enters. The DNA matches. So the DNA pulled from the car matches the sample that they have for Julie. And also he learned that on the receipt, there was like a poem item. Like there's like a very generic
household item, $9.99.
And come to find out it's a shovel, a very cheap shovel.
Yeah.
A very cheap. That is not what shovels cost. Shovels cost.
I don't think they cost that much in 2003 or four.
Maybe not. Maybe not. So this is where Sarah mentions Robin Knight, the model, the other missing model. And how she was found at Furnace Creek. So then we returned like scores of people searching the desert, like combing the desert. Greg Sanders kind of points out like, okay, I get like why the techs are out here, but why are there so many like off-duty officers? And Catherine's like, oh, this is like their chance to rescue a princess. Because scattered throughout this episode is a lot of focus on how pretty the victim is.
Yes, which is very true to the way, at least in my lifetime, news stories blow up on a national scale.
Yeah, I was gonna bring this is actually a good spot to bring it up. I was gonna bring this up. I just watched the Gabby Petito documentary on Netflix.
Yeah,
and I feel like they should have spent more time on it, but they did spend time on how much attention Gabby Petito, like how much attention her case got, given that she was like a young, pretty white blonde woman versus like women of color.
Yeah, there was a lot of that conversation going on at the time.
Yes,
too, yeah, they like mentioned on the internet and Twitter.
Yeah,
or
yeah, and so this
what
is,
have
this
you?
This is
but
definitely
the case also turned out to be really bizarre. So I think it like had extra legs as a result.
I think it did
But it only got there. Like it definitely only got there because it sort of checked those boxes. I mean, growing up, the big case was
JonBenet Ramsey.
You know, I think you hear people talk about like how many kids go missing irrespective of,
yes,
you know, race or gender, but like, you know, the balloon boy is probably the only boy we've had a national news story for them going missing, you know. It's like,
yeah.
It's always, you know, young women, and that's what for some reason gets people interested in talking. And so this is blown up, and it comes up kind of in later this episode because like they spent a lot of time talking about or looking at another case, and for all accounts and purposes that was also a young attractive female that went missing, but just didn't, it just didn't grasp the attention that this one just happened to click. So that definitely is like statistically far more likely, but it's also interesting that they talk about it. They sort of insinuate that like sometimes these things blow up, sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. And so after they have this conversation, one of the searchers says they found something. So Catherine and Greg Sanders approach, and there is a hand, a well-manicured hand, sticking out of the ground. So then we go to the team. They're processing the scene. They're like slowly uncovering the body. After they're done, Jim Brass walks over, and Catherine is explaining how like essentially the conditions in which she was buried, like preserved her, how nature preserved her body. Cause she's been missing, I think 6 days at this point, 7 days at this point, and she looks fresh. There's no like decomp. And Catherine points out, because she's in this like jacket, like this like zip up hood, like fleece sort of thing. And
kind of makes me think of like a running, like a heavier running shirt.
Yeah. And Catherine's like, a girl this beautiful wouldn't zip it up this far. And I was like,
of all the people.
Yeah, I was like, that's weird. And then we return to Howard. This time, Jim Brass and Catherine are with him. He has an attorney. And he would really like to photograph Catherine. Like, he would really like to photograph Catherine. But they get him to, like, focus more on the Julie case. And this is where he claims that it was an accident. He accidentally hit her with the car.
Yes.
And then he's saying they were out there because Julie needed headshots, but he doesn't know where the photos he took are. He doesn't know. He's who knows? So then Catherine is with Doc Robbins, and he's like, no, she was not hit by a car.
Yeah, like immediately, not hit by a car.
Not hit by a car. That's not what happened. She was asphyxiated, and in a way that like someone sat on her chest, and that
everyone is called, but she was crushed. Her chest was crushed, basically. Yeah.
And she also had like a wound to her ear, and Doc Robbins thinks that this happened like right before she died. There's also signs of sexual assault, like of trauma. And she also has like a fairly high blood alcohol level. And part of it might be the decomp process, but it's not fully explained by the decomp process. So they're like, did he force her to drink? Like, that's weird. She had this like very important dinner that night. Like, why would she be getting like drunk out in the desert? Which has like,
do they ever explain that? I feel like, nope. I nope. don't. Okay.
Nope.
Sometimes I'm like, did I just keep missing this?
Nope. There's a few inconsistencies in this episode, and this is one of them. They never explain this. Well, they sort of do. We'll get to it. But I feel like not adequately.
Yeah.
Is what I should say. Grissom and Catherine are with like a bunch of crime scene photos, and Catherine's letting Grissom know that the body has been released to the family. And at this point, they believe that the sexual assault, a foreign object was used in the sexual assault. Catherine is back with Howard and his attorney. And she's like, hey, yeah, that car accident, like you accidentally hitting her with the car, didn't happen. Someone killed her by sitting on her chest. Like she was on the ground and someone sat on her chest and killed her. And we learn in the scene that he had a previous charge. I couldn't get exactly what the charge
I was like, what is this thing?
I don't know, but he had a previous charge, and it sounds like maybe not obviously this like to this degree, but like a similar vein. Maybe, I don't know.
I swear to God they said crushing or something.
I don't know what they said. Listeners, let us know. This is where Howard said that she wanted to loosen up. So she was drinking, but then she never said stop. And he was like worried, like Catherine's like, why didn't you say this to me earlier? And he's like, oh, I was worried what you would think of me. And I'm like, is he trying to say that like she got drunk and then like willingly had sex with him?
I don't know. A guy's like, she didn't say stop, I assume they mean sex, not drinking.
That's what I assume. Know? Yeah, I don't, but they didn't. There wasn't clarification there, but we then we're still with Catherine. We learn that she has a visitor, and look at that. Howard's brother has evidence. Howard's brother shows up to HQ and is like, hey, here's rolls of photos. Here's a note.
I still don't.
There you go.
I'll be honest. I didn't really, like, I get it, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't know what this guy's master plan was.
I
don't think it's very good.
No, it is not. So then Catherine and Archie are, they're like, they have the rolls like hanging in like in a makeshift like dark room. And so they're looking at the rolls of film and they realize that the clothing that she's wearing in the photos is different than the clothing that they found her in. They then come across one picture that has like a nude woman like over the dash of a car. So it's like a double exposure. So they're like, that's weird. We definitely need to like print that and find out what's going on. Sarah enters and an officer, they were like canvassing like trash barrels and stuff like that in the area. And an officer got a hit on one. So then Catherine and Sarah are going through this bin and look at that. She had a ton of headshots. So they were not out there to take headshots because yes. She had plenty of headshots. Like he was lying about that. And they find her day planner. She only had two things in her day planner. The showgirls like producer dinner that evening and then meeting up with Howard. Then Catherine, you know, she's looking through the items. She finds stockings with blood. And this is my inconsistency. And maybe... So I'm curious because maybe I did just legitimately miss this, but Catherine's like, oh, like essentially like, why would her stockings have blood on them when Howard said she was only in her underwear and bare feet? When did Howard say she was?
No, he didn't.
She was wearing her underwear and was in bare feet. Like, when did he say that?
It also really confused me because why, like, she's buried in different clothing. And I was assuming it's because she was naked.
Yes.
You know, like he made her get naked and then he just dressed her in something different.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's hence the whole, it's zipped up more than a girl that pretty would ever zip up her shirt for, you know, because even though they said it's November and cold in exactly the spot that they were in.
Yep. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's like, yeah, it's definitely like something was cut or script changes or something. Yeah. It's kind of a mess the way like they pull out evidence and then they don't talk about it and then they don't really resolve it.
Yeah.
They don't really carry it through.
No.
The script, the final, I shouldn't blame the original scriptwriter. I don't know who's responsible, but the final sort of script of this episode and the direction of this episode is kind of a mess.
Yeah. So then Sarah and Catherine are kind of diving deeper into examining the clothes and Sarah's like shocked about how much the shoes cost. And I had to laugh because I was just like, oh, this is so long ago. Cause she was like $65. And I was like, oh man, $65.
Yeah.
A really nice pair of shoes. That's not what they go for nowadays. And then there's a conversation about essentially, I wish they spent more time on this, but how we talk to young girls. Cause Catherine goes to Sarah and she's like, did your father tell you were pretty? And Sarah's like, I guess maybe, like, I don't know. And she's like, well, did he tell you that you were smart? And she was like, oh yeah. Like Sarah's like more confident in that, like the fact that he told her that she was smart. And Catherine's like, yeah, it's very dangerous when the only thing that you're told is that you're pretty because you essentially think you have to rely on other people to be successful. Cause like you don't have the skills to be successful yourself.
Or you feel like pretty your is all value you is based on your looks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a tough way to get ahead. Your father ever tell you you were pretty?
I guess.
He ever tell you you were smart?
Yeah.
So it probably never occurred to you that you wouldn't be successful. If all you ever hear is that you're gorgeous, you can let everything else fall away and leave you in a very dangerous place.
And then Catherine does a blood experiment, which I feel doesn't match up to what happened. So essentially she's trying to like determine like if she was bleeding from her ear, like where it would fall on the stockings. I feel like Catherine holds the dropper. I feel like Catherine holds the dropper way far away.
3 feet from her head.
Yes. I was like, what are you doing? This doesn't make any sense. But they also match up the blood, like how the blood would have happened.
If you drop blood out of a dropper in a windowless like lab.
Yeah, yeah.
We know where the blood's going,
straight down. Yeah.
And if it's going anywhere else, it's because you're holding your dropper at a weird angle for some reason.
For a super weird angle.
It's like, why? Get a dummy, put a dress on it, put some slacks on it, and drop some blood at the ear and see what happens.
Yeah. This was I was like, I don't think you're going to present this in court because I don't feel like this is like court level experimentation.
It's like one of our only like evidence things they do this whole episode too, and it's not good.
It's not good. So then Archie and Nick are going over, they process the film. So they're going over the film on the computer. And Nick is like, hey, can you, they're on the double exposed image. So the image of like a naked woman over the dash. They separate it out and then they compare the dash, like the odometer, to the car, like the one that he rented out or was given to photograph. Different cars, not the same car.
Which they also never really, I mean, again,
they do, like, they sort don't of
explain
go over
it. They just sort of like move past it and yeah. Like, oh, because it's, yeah, they're just like, it ends up being not her, not the same car is what they say. Yeah. But then it'll be like, well, who's that person? Who's that car? There was another case. They were like, maybe he murdered this other person. Yeah. What if this is evidence that he murdered that other person?
Yeah.
You know, they don't even follow that up. I don't know. It just felt like I was like, had trouble understanding like why they were talking like I had trouble understanding why they would just move on from stuff this episode.
Yeah. So then Catherine and Sarah are looking over the photos that Howard took of Julie, and there's like a obvious progression of fear. It's like, oh, she looks normal in this photo, and then it's like as they're going through the roll of film, it's like obvious that she's starting to realize like something's up and something's wrong, and she's, you know, she's getting scared and she's getting nervous. And this is when Nick enters and he's like, hey, it's a different car. And so the team realizes they're looking at the photos together, that the odometers don't match. And Sarah's like, if those don't match, is this a different girl? Like, is this not Julie? Is this a different girl that he took photographs of? And Catherine wants to compare, you know, the photos they took of Julie in autopsy to the photo, and like essentially kicks Nick and Sarah out, like, go take a break, guys. And Sarah's kind of like, what? Like, kind of like, all right. And they do leave, but she's obviously like not happy about it. So then we have what I feel like is a way, especially when I feel like there was other things not explained in this episode, way too much time spent with Sarah scrolling through autopsy photos.
Yeah, they spend a long time like looking at these autopsy photos, showing the audience the thing that they said they didn't want to show the whole web.
Yep. I mean, minus the vagina. They didn't show that.
No, they don't have that on your Paramount Plus. No,
I don't have that on the Paramount Plus. So then Catherine walks into a room where Sarah is and lets her know that the naked body in the photo is not Julie. And this is like, they don't really hash it out, but Sarah's kind of like, what was that you just pulled? And Catherine tries to justify it by being like, hey, I exploited the situation. You would do the same. You would do the exact same thing. Like, you're basically saying like, you're going to find yourself in the exact same situation at some point. You're going to do the exact same thing. And I'm like,
I think the better line there would have been something like, you're going to find yourself in this situation one day. And I hope you would do the same thing.
Yes.
For the good of the family, for the good of the, the case.
That is 100% how that should have been worded, but that's not how it was worded. And then as they're looking, because they're trying to find the foreign object that he used to assault her. And this is where Catherine realizes that they're looking at the wrong evidence as she's looking at the empty gun case.
Yeah.
So then we have Catherine processing the gun, because that's what he was originally arrested on, was these like gun possession charges.
Which is a really weird thing to say, because they just showed up at his house because he said he, you know, a weird
never
thing.
Meant to
they
hurt
clearly,
her.
They clearly showed up with the intention of thinking it was related to her, especially based on Brass's reaction.
Yeah.
So yeah, they arrested him because he had a gun. But only after they told him to walk out of his house after surrounding him with SWAT. That's not what they were there to arrest him for.
No.
It was kind of a weird thing. There's just a way for them to bring that piece of evidence back around.
I agree. And so then after processing the gun, she walks into a room with Howard. He fired his lawyer. So now he's just representing himself. Again, not suggested by us here at Who Are You, a CSI podcast. Don't go into this alone. I've been watching the first 48 recently, and there's so many times where I'm watching it and these people never get a lawyer. And I'm just sitting there like, get a lawyer. What are you doing?
I'm surprised his lawyer didn't like get an injunction against him, because like he's questionable mind and shouldn't probably be allowed to make the decision to not have a lawyer.
I agree entirely. But this doesn't stop Catherine. She's like, okay, great. You don't have a lawyer anymore. I'm just going to talk to you. And so she lets him know that Julie's cervical tissue was on the gun site. So that is what he used to assault her. And this is when Howard gets angry. And Howard like tries to lunge at her. And he calls her a bitch. And, you know, he's He's very upset that his scheme has been fully.
Allegedly, unraveled. There's another guy in the room. Which we hadn't even seen him on the camera.
As mentioned before, there's quite a few scenes of like news coverage. So we return to news coverage on like they're going to be charging Howard. This is like the charges that they're going to bring against him and like the prison term if they get it. And then we go to Grissom talking to Catherine and he's telling her that, you know, she did well. But he does ask. He's like, hey, like, how's things with Nick and Sarah? And she's like, oh, it's fine. It's good. They're pros. Is it, Catherine? I'm not sure I agree with you.
All their animosity towards me, they've gotten over it by now, I'm sure.
Totally gotten over. It's been like 2 hours. We're good. Like, it's all water under the bridge. Who cares? And they again sort of kind of bring up this idea of media as a moral conscious, because this case got so much attention and they think the reason that he unraveled versus the other victim was that there wasn't this media coverage on the first victim, on Robin Knight, I believe is her name. And with Julie, you know, the media like picked it up and she was like the sweetheart and she was gorgeous and they just kept talking about her and he just couldn't escape her. It was like he killed her and then...
Yeah, I think he thinks he was guilt. Like, the idea is like he's riddled with guilt because he just keeps hearing about her and regrets instead of just moving past it and forgetting
being able to just move on from it.
Which, I'll be honest, I think we're giving the media too much credit here.
I think we're giving the media a little bit too much credit here. And we end the episode with the more of the audition from Julie, like her tape and about how her father says like everyone loves her and she agrees. That was also a little weird.
Yeah.
Like, that was a weird thing to be like, yep, everyone loves me. Totally get it. And I'm like, does everybody love you?
A little vanity moment. I don't know.
A little bit, but whatever. But, you know, we're not here.
Also, why are they still watching these tapes?
I have no idea why they're
watching these tapes. They've clearly seen them all. There's nothing on them. The case is functionally solved.
Yeah. No, but I have no idea. But that is the end of the episode. So, Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I gave today's episode a 1.
Whoa!
I originally gave it a 1.5, and then on the rewatch, gosh, I downgraded it to a 1. I gave it a skip. It was painful to watch a second time.
It was a rough second watch.
How this episode was shot. I didn't really like the storyline. I don't really think there was much in there. Even the character storylines, like, it was just, I didn't like it. I didn't like the way the characters were acting. They just seemed whiny and crazy, and I was like, this is airplane level episode. I was like, I hope this is the worst episode of the season. And I was like, I was at the last moment. I was like, you know what? I don't want to have to watch this episode ever again.
Oh, no.
I would skip this episode if I was watching this season, the show through a third time. And so I was like, I don't know. I mean, there's still room for a half. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I downgraded from a 1.5 to a 1 on the second watch.
Wow. So I don't blame you at all. And I can appreciate where you're coming from. I gave it a 2 out of 5, but a lot of that is, and maybe this isn't fair, but this is just how I'm rating it, is the potential that the episode had.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there was a lot, like, there was a lot of things in this episode that usually I like, which I think bumped up the score. But they didn't do it well.
You know,
like, there was character development. There was, other than Warwick, the whole team was involved. There was a lot of like interpersonal things going on. And I usually appreciate that. But I feel like they didn't do it well in this episode.
I kind of want to go back to my notes for the airplane episode, because I think one of my big notes in that episode was like, how, man, what a cool idea for an episode.
Yeah.
To have done it so horribly.
Yes. Like, that's kind of how I feel about this episode.
I think I rate things worse when that happens.
Yeah. I can because understand that. Because
I think I hold it against them. I was
Because they could have done it so much better. I feel like this was edited poorly. Like, they referenced a lot of things that never...
Script changes. It's hard to know who's responsible.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
It's very strange. But I'm giving it a 2 out of 5 because it did technically have a lot of things that I usually like. I just feel like they didn't do it well. I would also say skip. Like, I don't... Meh.
Unfriendly Skies, that's the airplane episode.
Yes, that is the airplane episode. Yeah, so 2 out of 5, skip. Just had a lot of potential. technically had things that I enjoy about an episode. Executed it very, very poorly.
I think it was harder to give it a skip than give it a one, only because like I just don't know if any of the things that happened with the characters are gonna
carry over into other things.
But I'm sure they'll recap it. Just skip it.
Yeah, they'll bring it up again.
It's not worth watching.
Yeah.
This is definitely bottom three episode for me of all time.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. All right.
It was a tough one. Rewatching it is always very telling. And we're recording later in the week than normal, and as a result, the number of days between when I watched it the first time and the second time
is quite high.
Usually that means like I don't know. I feel like a bad episode is not as bad, and you know, when you're watching like a kind of mediocre episode back to back days or something. Is often kind of like, oh yeah, but like you put enough time, sometimes it's like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot what happened here or something. Keeps me more interested. This whole episode, I was just like, oh god, then this scene again.
Oh god, I gotta watch this.
Yeah, I don't think I liked Howard's character. I didn't like the way he was interacting. I didn't like the way they interacted with him. I kept trying to find redeeming value in this episode, and I kept coming up short.
And you were like, nope, not finding.
It's like, you know what? I think I gave this episode too many points.
Well, we'll see how we feel. Hopefully we feel better about next week's episode, but who knows? We'll find out when we return to review season 4, episode 9, Grissom versus the Volcano.
What?
It literally called Grissom versus the Volcano.
Okay.
Yep. But until then, we'll talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.